CliffCentral.com. So here he is. Look at this, everybody. Robin Wheeler. Give me the proper drum roll.
I'm a drummer.
Yeah. You are a drummer?
It's part of my repertoire. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You're a very interesting man.
Well, thank you. Yeah. That's part of being yourself for a living is to explore all your talents, you know. So, and music is one of my great passions. But as a youngster, I kind of found that it kind of got thwarted, as our creativity often is, by school or sort of uncaring parents. You know, the slightest little reaction from someone can have a disproportionately strong effect on a child. So I never really followed the music. And then in my 30s, I was busy coaching a client, and the whole coaching session turned around, and it kind of turned into where he said to me, "You need to make music."
Wow.
And I said to him, "Look, you don't have to pay for the session." He said, "What do you mean? It's been the best one I've ever had." So, but I went off and started drumming, and next thing I was in bands and touring the country, you know, summer tour. So I kind of was a rock star in my late 30s. And that brought a kind of side of being yourself for a living out that hadn't been there or that I'd given up on, you know. So
I had this discussion with a friend of mine over the weekend, because I'm interested in a lot of things. So, you know, I'm a frustrated architect. I love chemistry. I want to read a lot of books about history. I love music too.
Right.
So there's so many things, but it gives me more joy to dabble in those things, to learn more about each of those subjects that I care about, than it does for me to sit and watch a movie or have one of those inane lunchtime conversations with people you don't really care about because you're actually there for the meal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Definitely. I mean, I don't even have a TV. It doesn't even occur to me. I'm so busy doing all those sorts of things and squeezing them in somehow. So I think there's a big shift going on. You know, the intro you did, Gareth, I think one way or another, people are either sort of choosing it for themselves, reading the writing on the wall and realizing, okay, you know, this is probably the best time in history to ever take that leap, or being pushed to do it. And they're getting retrenched 3 times in a row, and those job interviews just don't work out. And then they realize, well, hang on, you know, I'm using an old model, an old paradigm to kind of evaluate my life. Maybe I'm using my father's fears or my mother's hopes. And I've got these talents, and the world needs me to be entrepreneurial, to be creative, to take a chance, to keep living in the moment. And these are things that the great mystics have taught us, you know. So that's really like the old wisdom, the wisdom of ages applied to the modern vernacular and the modern moment, and that's what my work is.
All right, so let's look at this. People are miserable at work, a lot of people. They get in the car in the morning, have to sit in traffic.
Yeah.
Don't really feel like being there. They're doing it for the paycheck. If you find yourself doing this 5 days a week and you live for the weekend and you live for that holiday at the end of the year, that's not healthy.
No.
Because your majority of your time, I mean, 5 days out of 7, you're in misery.
Yeah.
What a horrible place to be.
And it's not even sort of intense misery. It's this kind of like quiet desperation.
It's like malaise. Yes. It's just like a bad meal.
Yeah.
Right? You eat it, but you know you've got to eat something, but it tastes disgusting.
Yeah. So you want to keep those meals to a minimum. Yeah. You might find the odd one cropping up, but you want to shift the weight from doing that as a matter of course to trying to do it as little as possible. So
what do you do? I mean, where do you begin?
Well, I think you begin where you are. One of the first things to do is to accept that where you are is the right place at the right time. It might not feel great. You might be stricken with that kind of malaise. But until you accept where you are, you can't make a sort of prudent move forward. And being yourself for a living, I mean, it's got – that's the term I came up with. It sounds straightforward, like you said a bit earlier. It's also the most difficult thing you can possibly imagine doing in your life. You know, it is a sweet spot that you find, but in order to be yourself, you've got to find out who you're not. So there's a lot of trial and error. There's a lot of risk involved. It might go well. It might go in a very challenging way at times, you know. So you have to be on a journey that you start at a certain point. So wherever you are is the right place to start.
Okay. So accept your current circumstances. Yes. Go, this is where I am right now. I might not be 100% happy about this, but I've got to appreciate every part of where I am and what I'm doing so that I can start making changes.
Yeah, so that you can take responsibility for yourself. So
do we lie to ourselves? Do we convince ourselves things are either not as bad as they are, or that we think that they're they should be a whole lot better than they are?
Yeah, I think factors like that are part of it, you know, and I think often your mind runs away and sort of, if I think before I started out, I worked in the corporate world,
mm-hmm.
and I was doing extremely well in terms of what my mind was telling me, you know. I was
right.
progressing quickly, I'd been promoted well, I was achieving certain aspects of my life, but it wasn't what my heart wanted. And eventually my body kind of took over and said, right, you're not going to work anymore. And I had to spend a month at home.
What happened?
I just kind of got faint. It was sort of an exhaustion, really. You know, I could have labeled it.
Was it some kind of breakdown?
Well, that was my terror at the time. I thought I was breaking down, and I worked among colleagues who were all psychologists. So I sat at home terrified that I was being diagnosed. But again, that's what I'm saying. There's that fear. My dad was an accountant. So of course, you know, conformity was what I was brought up with. Yet I'm a rebel and an artist.
Right.
So, my body kind of made that decision for me. And once I listened to that and I realized, okay, I can't go against myself anymore. Even though my head was telling me I was doing well, there was more to me. There was my heart and my soul who I had to listen to. And when I did that, when I eventually realized, okay, that's the past and it's over and I have to do my thing. As soon as I decided that, I started to feel better. And I almost used that feeling as my guide, because as soon as I went off course, I'd start to get that horrible feeling again. And that kept me on track. So sometimes it happens. I'm, you know, in a way, I'm quite a sort of risk taker. But in another way, I really need to be pushed to the very limit before I change.
A lot of people like that.
Yeah, it's not always a human condition. Yeah.
Well, you have to be scared out of comfort.
Yes, exactly.
Otherwise, you just keep doing what you've always done. Do you think a lot of people settle for less than they should be?
Big time.
Whether it's in jobs, relationships,
yeah.
their health, money, their children, their wife, yes. everything, right? They do. They kind of.
It's a big compromise.
But that sounds so. It sounds so depressing, but it's the reality for many people. So when you say you start with where you are, should some people be acknowledging that they are, they've settled for less?
Definitely. You see, again, the acceptance there would be a case of coming to terms with how shit it actually is rather than pretending it's not so bad, you know.
Yeah.
That may precipitate an immediate change. It might take a while. I took 9 months to work my way out because when I got on course in my own life, I went back into the employment environment
mm-hmm.
and wanted to leave impeccably. I wanted to do it the right way, not only for my relationship with the market and the employer, mm-hmm. but for my own integrity. So you'll know the right way to do things, you know. Unfortunately, again, life's a bit upside down. The very people who maybe care for you most, say your family, might be in a sense, your worst enemies when it comes to changing. It's almost like there's a social drag. You know, as soon as you try and change, all your friends either resist it or treat you the way you were before you changed. So it's a hell of a big thing, actually. You know, it can be. It doesn't necessarily have to be that. You know, but you kind of take that leap. I like a bit of drama. I call it theater. So if I look back on my life, I tend to have big climaxes to things, a buildup of energy, a breakthrough. And then I write about it, you know. So I've got used to myself. I make it work for me. But everyone's got their own style. I mean, you've done that. You've gone from radio to your own business. You've gone closer to your own truth. You've broken new ground.
So much easier before.
Well, there you go. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Ask my valley. We would arrive. We'd do the show. We'd leave. It's a piece of cake.
Now you've sort of got a lot more pressure.
Oh, you've got to figure everything out from the beginning to the end, you know?
And make it look calm and relaxed.
But, all right, let's talk about this being yourself for a living.
Yeah.
And so you say the first step is acknowledge where you are and start with that. What next? Because some people, there isn't that catalyst.
Mm.
Some people just feel this malaise. It's not working.
Yes.
It's not necessarily going badly, but it's not. I'm not satisfied.
Okay, so accept and take stock of where you are, and then look at the energy that's resident in that. Look at – that could be frustration. It could be apathy. It could be illness. It could be rage. But there's some latent energy there that you can mobilize. I'd say the second step is to make some sort of gesture, some sort of irreversible decision. So when I do talks, I put a line down on the floor in the conference room, and I say, cross that line. On the one side is complacency, frustration, compromise, all the things you talked about. On the other side is living your purpose by being of service for a living, or being yourself for a living. My terminology, which is just a gesture, a gift, my work, but whatever works for you. But you make that irreversible decision. So, because if you look at people who change their lives and then talk about it, they'll almost all be able to tell you that there was one turning point for them. Usually a dramatic thing. It could have been an accident or some sort of death of somebody close to them, some sort of pivot in their life. So I'm saying induce that.
Yeah.
And then just say, okay, I'm going to go for it. I don't know what it is yet. I don't know exactly what it looks like. I've got pointers. I'd like to be this. I wanted to be that when I was a kid. I enjoy this. But take that leap of faith in yourself and make some sort of gesture in the same way as, say, buying a ticket for a plane. Just get on the plane. Some sort of thing where you can't go back. Because after that, you close all those trap doors, all those excuses. And instead of your mind oscillating between 51% one way and 49% and then doing
– Yeah.
You've just – very frustrating. It's too late now. Yeah,
just
exactly.
Commit.
Commit, exactly. Commit.
Are we all – chasing this idea of balance, and it's fake. It doesn't exist. Like, there's no such thing, really. Everybody's terrified that they're either going to be too good at business and not good enough at parenting, too good at domestic nonsense, but not necessarily good enough as a life partner to somebody. You know, there's so many things that everybody's trying to hold. Their plate's spinning in the air, right? And maybe we're fooling ourselves. Yeah. Like maybe some of the time you just be in the moment.
Exactly.
Instead of having to worry about how well you're doing on your scorecard.
Exactly. Well, I think that's very interesting that you say that, because I hadn't quite thought of it that way. But what that makes me think of is, firstly, we're caught up in other people's expectations. We're bombarded with information. I mean, you just have to, like, scroll through Twitter and you're overwhelmed. Or you take one magazine off the shelf and there are five contradictory articles in there.
Yeah.
You're totally overwhelmed. Right. So people are severed from their own knowing. And hence you try to do all these things that are externally sort of sold to us, you know. Whereas you need to literally tune into yourself. And the simplest bottom line into anything is to just be in the moment, because in that you are fully present, all of your faculties are optimally functional, and you're spontaneous. I mean, that's how you guys do this show. You know what you're doing, but you're in the moment, and that's what brings it alive. So if everybody can do that in their lives and their businesses and their work, then definitely we're shifting from an old model where you fitted in. It was based on an industrial model of work. You worked in a factory-like environment. You gave up who you were when you left home in the morning, to a human economy where you need to innovate, you need to create, you need to personify your job, you need to live what you do, you need to be entrepreneurial. So that shift from the old to the new, to me, is towards being yourself for a living.
Are there any merits at all? Are there any good things about being in that factory mentality?
Well, I'm biased. I've been there. It was hell. I think it suits some people. I wouldn't sort of dismiss it outright, but I certainly feel that it's a very unhealthy place. It's become more unhealthy. The people I see these days,
Everyone.
I mean, 20 years ago when I started out, 21, it was, yes, but. Everyone was like, we know you're right, but. And everyone was focusing on what came after the but.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's visionary, but no one's got it yet. Now, everyone is doing it. Wherever I turn, I can't believe it. I actually have to remind myself that I'm a success now, because I'm so used to sort of dealing with that, the resistance. But there's a massive change going on around the world, and it's happening to everybody in their own respective ways. And I feel that the corporate world has basically exploited itself out of business, and it's hanging on to the last threads of its business model.
And how does it do that? By threatening people, by forcing them into ever more restrictive cages.
Yeah, basically squeezing
their
the life.
Factory farming.
That's exactly. You
know what they're doing. You
go and look at those things with chickens in coops and that.
Yeah.
But people in banks are no different. They're being exploited to the same degree. We're being farmed.
Yeah. And corporations have become, they've lost touch with the people that they're trying to.
The humanity.
Correct.
There's no humanity left there.
I mean, they try. They give it lip service, they give it lip service,
they
have,
exactly.
HR departments, and they've got fun days that they have at their camp. They have some like snakes and ladders game they play in the office, or
swing on the ropes or something.
Yeah, whatever stupid crap they've got in the office to try and make it look like it's a fun place. But everybody knows it's an auditing firm.
Well, you know, I mean, 20 years ago, that's what I saw, is that people, you know, the general manager of human resources, which was supposed to be the custodian of humanity there, they would say it was the key value add, that people are our asset, but he would go off to America, come back a month later with the latest buzzword.
Mm.
But that was incongruent with his conduct. He was still authoritarian.
Yeah.
And that was a turning point for me, because I realized, yes, the organization does need that, but it needs authenticity. It needs you to live it, but it's also preventing you from doing so. So that's just intensified over the last 20 years, where they literally have been the gap between what they say and what they do has become so vast that people are existentially unable to cope with it, you know?
Yeah. I read such an interesting article last night about this existential stuff that's going on. You know, 2016, there's a huge level of cynicism and skepticism about everything now. Maybe we should just talk about this for a second. Because I sent the article to Ben. I don't know if you've read it yet, Ben.
Not sure, Gareth, I intend to question.
They're going to, like, why Deadpool was the best movie of last year, and all the cynicism and kind of, you know, it's almost like you remove the fourth wall and you joke within the joke about how crappy the situation is. Because actually life has probably never been better for most people on Earth than it is right now. So now we have to dig deep to find things to complain about.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look at all the kind of the stuff that's going on in politics, for example, it's deeply cynical.
Mm.
People are saying, well, we don't even trust anyone with a political record. We would rather put our trust in someone who's got no record at all, who's a maverick.
Yes.
And not everyone is an entrepreneur, right? Not everybody.
Yeah. It's a difficult job to take on, you know. And again, it's in that old model, to be an entrepreneurial person or to be an artistic person, you talked earlier about everything sort of clicking into place, and that definitely is a sign that you're on course. But it can be difficult. I mean, I was watching an interview with Elon Musk recently, and he said, when you go into your own business, first you're the happiest person around. Then for a very long time, you're very unhappy because it's very hard, and then you're very happy again. And a lot of people fail along the way. But if you want to be successful in the true sense, you have to then, as Steve Jobs said, do what you love. And you have to do it. You have to be so true to it. Hence, I say, make that commitment to your truth, even if you don't know exactly how that's going to unfold. But if you've crossed that line, then it will see you through, and you can trust, well, I've got nowhere to turn, actually. So I can only just get wiser, better, you know, more creative. And one of the things, too, I think, is a simpler life. So a lot of that cynicism is that all the nonsense we've been sold.
We've got too many choices. We've got too much luxury. Yeah. There's too much available.
But then we reach this, we max out on that stuff.
These days you could buy nuts that are glazed in honey. You could buy raw nuts. You could buy salted nuts. I mean, this is a joke. Our ancestors used to pick whatever kind of nut they could find on whatever tree was nearby. Now you can tailor make your nut selection.
You can have an existential crisis at the nut.
Can you imagine?
You haven't even got to the dried fruit.
No. It's madness.
So we're all sitting at those sorts of mad limits, and we having to reevaluate and use our own truth. And a simple life. I mean, in the last 6 years, I discovered Thailand, and it's been a great love of mine because I can go there and literally just be myself. 95% of what occupies me here in Joburg is eliminated, and I have a small room with an aircon, a motorbike, and an ATM card. And the first person I talk to is at dinner. I can just be myself. And you just have this natural joy that comes to you, which is what we should be living.
Yeah, Ben goes there often.
Okay.
That sounds a lot like my life, actually.
It is.
Motorbike, talking to someone at dinner. Yeah. Well, outside of this, of course.
Yeah. But that's a kind of an authenticity.
It is. And I think, you know, we all find different ways to access that authenticity. You know, maybe somebody, or meditation, you could call it. Somebody likes to get on a bike at 4 o'clock in the morning and do 140 Ks every day. And in that, they work through all of their frustrations, and then they hit that zone where everything's clear. And that's that simple clarity, that truth there, that authenticity. And we're all searching for it, and we're finding it.
Yeah, I think we're getting closer. But I mean, this this realization that some humans have had in history, and more of us are starting to have now, that there might be meaning, there might not. But you got to get on with it anyway.
Yeah, you got to.
So do whatever it is that makes you feel like there's meaning.
Yeah,
is that right?
Well, there's that famous saying that you don't find the meaning in life; you create it. And for me, it's about both, because you do create it. It is an active thing. You've got to take those steps. You've got to be proactive in what you're doing. But at the same time, it's equally a sort of a feminine thing. You know, that proactive is more the masculine kind of archetype: get out there, do something, achieve it. And then the feminine is let go, relax, be in the moment, accept life as it is. Don't postpone, you know. So it's kind of balancing those two things and allowing yourself to be in a state of balance, but not where you've contrived it, you know, not where you've sort of doing it based on somebody else's suggestion, but where you, from your own natural intelligence, let it arise. Pretty much like being a child, really, you know, but with the maturity of an entrepreneur, somebody who's taken responsibility for his life, taken on those challenges, overcome his limitations, you know.
So what kind of things do people come to you with when you're doing the coaching, or you're giving people talks or advice or whatever? Do they mostly have career issues? Do they mostly have relationship issues, health? What is the stuff that you think people are most keenly aware they need to change?
Career tends to be, because of the way I'm branded, tends to be the sort of presenting issue, but it's not like I'm a psychologist. But generally the word that I would say typifies it is people are at a crossroads, or there's some sort of transformation happening. So I generally, I think it's my nature, it's the nature of what I do, but people come at a point where their whole life is sort of ended the way they knew it, you know, and then they have to find something new. And pretty much they know already what to do. I just listen and give it back to them with a few insightful and perhaps mischievous spins on things.
And then that gives you satisfaction in turn, right?
Yeah, well, I have a bit of fun along the way. And I think having fun is a big part of being yourself for a living. Again, you can get lost in the seriousness of it or the fear of it. Again, Elon Musk, I mean, when he sold PayPal, he took the $180 million and he put $70 million into SpaceX, and he had to borrow money for the rent, you know. So you literally sort of, if you've got something that you believe in, you'll risk everything for that, you know, because it means so much to you. But look at him now.
Yeah, sure.
He's also from Pretoria, huh?
Of course. But here's the thing, right? A lot of us are resentful.
Yeah.
A lot of people are just, they see someone like Elon Musk and they go, oh, that's so unfair, it's not
me. They feel defeated by it, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't make them feel good. Those are the same people who will find a reason to complain about everything in the world and will never add a solution to the mix. They're constantly miserable and downcast. Now, I mean, there's a survival mechanism that comes in with pessimism.
Sure.
You know, and being a pessimist and being negative all the time does have its pros, ironically, because you will survive probably everything's suspicious. Mm. You don't trust anybody. You're paranoid. Mm. But it will keep you, to a large degree, out of trouble, where optimists might end up finding trouble.
Yes.
But this is not the way to live.
Sure. Look, you talk about people. I see that process, and in fact, most of what we're discussing, in myself. So I will drift into a sort of cynicism and a pessimism that may arise from a very natural response to challenges that I'm facing. So I may sort of take a certain decision at a certain time that's appropriate, and then I look around and I've drifted into a very negative frame of mind, you know, that's
closed. But you're aware enough to pick that up?
But the key is awareness, Gareth, exactly, because if you can remain aware, that's the transcendent side of us. That's the part of us that can watch over whatever's happening. And to me, that's what we need to activate in ourselves, is that awareness, because the part of us, duality is the mechanism of evolution. You need day and night, up and down, hot and cold, black and white. But a higher consciousness sees both, black and white, in and out, because that's the complementary interaction between those opposites that makes the world work and makes things move forward. So we're getting out of a lower level of consciousness where you're identified with the mechanism to a higher consciousness, which to me is what this shift is again into the new, into being yourself for a living, where you can watch yourself doing things. You can see what you're doing and make an informed, and you can laugh at yourself. You can be yourself.
So you can actually, you're observing.
That witness, again, a spiritual thing, being in the now, observing, witnessing. So you may go through all sorts of, you may pendulate from one extreme to the other. You can do that in a whole day. You can go from being so happy to being really distraught and like really the Murrin all within all four seasons. But then you realize, okay, well, who's watching all of this? And that person makes much wiser decisions. That person, that conscious person lives in the moment. That person can facilitate their environment in a much more mature way and light and playful way and childlike way. And to me, that's the shift in consciousness that we're all going through. And I've got labels for it. I call it being yourself for a living because it's a nice sort of byline.
You know? It sounds too good to be true, though. You know, you say be yourself for a living, people imagine, well, all right, I feel like being myself would be to lie in bed until 12.
Well, you can do that. You can do that because in a way, you have to test those sorts of boundaries, you know. So you could do that. I mean, if you take, say, what I did when I started out, I thought to myself, I assumed unlimited financial resources. I ran out of money 3 months later, but I still assumed.
Yeah.
What would I do with 100 bars?
Hmm.
Well, of course, you tour the world 3 times, but then what happens then?
Yeah.
You get home and you've watched the grass grow, which is lovely because you hated your job. And this is exactly what I did. I was burnt out. I was so unhappy in my job. And then I lay and I watched the grass grow. But then what happens? Well, you start to feel this genuine creativity and you start to read those books and you start to dabble in architecture. And next thing, all of these things are sort of converging into this, like rivers gushing into a catchment area where there's this overall vision of, wow, this is what I want to do with my life, and these are all the strands, and this is how I manage it. Well, now Elon Musk again says that if you look at the advice he gives, he says do all of them at the same time. He's got 3 massive businesses that he runs all at the same time.
Tesla, SpaceX, and
what's the other
something
one?
Else.
But that thing, and for example, I've been saying to people, I said it just now, explore all your talents, because the drummer is, the speaker or the writer might be very cerebral. But the drummer doesn't even use his mouth.
Mm.
He uses his hands and his feet. So that's very primal. And drumming is the first instrument that humans invented. It's the heartbeat. It's the rhythm of nature. And it takes me out of my head and puts me into my body. And I can speak to people on a spiritual or a physical level or a musical level. And then drumming balances my other endeavors. It also informs them. I'm the only speaker on the circuit who has a talk with a live band. So suddenly I've got a brand. And those different strands start to plait together. And you've got this uniqueness that is you given form in your business. So you, again, being yourself for a living. It's not that you just sit there and be yourself and
everything works.
Yeah.
No, there has to be a direction. There has to be a movement.
Movement. But then part of that is an actual element of doing nothing, because they say, you know, if you really, idleness is the key to genius. So if you can sit and do nothing, if you've got the balls to do that, and you claim that space. I mean, I go to Thailand, I write a whole book in a month. That's why I've got another 18 lined up.
Wow. That need to come. You got 18 more in you?
Yeah. It's just a way of life, you know? So, and I mean, I've got writing where I always recommend writing because it's a form of journaling. So it's kind of almost meditation. It's a form of planning. It's a form of therapy because my writing is always there for me. You know, it always listens. It doesn't argue. It doesn't fall asleep. It's there. So I've found a voice in these insights books where there's no structure. There's just a whole lot of insights, easy to read. But I can cover, as you said, absolutely anything in there. So I absolutely thrive on it. And then I end up with product. And I bring one out every year or so. And I've got – it's newsworthy. And you invite me onto your show. So, again, there's that sense of integration where things flow together. But you've got to take the risk. You've got to explore your talents. You've got to think like an entrepreneur and a business person. You've got to be artistic in what you do. Bring something creative and magical to it.
You know, I said something earlier, and I wonder if you agree, that a lot of people do whatever they're doing just because it gets them a paycheck.
Yeah.
But when you're doing something that you're really good at, that other people care about, that delivers some kind of value to them, you'll just make huge amounts of money.
Eventually.
It just automatically starts to happen eventually.
It should
right?
do.
Yeah. I mean, that's how the energy goes.
Yes.
You agree with that?
In principle, it can be harder than that. You know, you can find – one of my heroes has always been Bruce Springsteen, because to me he's been a personification of being yourself for a living.
Right.
To buy his first guitar, he painted someone's house and mowed a few lawns. But other than that, he never worked a day in his life. And he took that guitar and he said, the first time I could look in the mirror and stand what I saw was when I had a guitar in my hand. So he'd been brought up in a Catholic school – put in the dustbin by the nuns, you know, really, you know, treated, sort of damaged, you know.
Yeah.
But and all of his intelligences were not recognized by the school system, and I had that exact problem myself. I mean, I was intelligent enough to do well academically, but I wasn't interested in it. What I loved was being in my room at night listening to music, and those artists that were 5 years older than me were educating me. So that thing of Springsteen taking that irreversible step and just going for it. And he only started making money sort of 10 years after he signed a record deal.
Yeah.
And he was already a 10-year veteran on the circuit by then. So it took him 20 years before the money came in enough to, number one, call it, you know, decent money, and number two, pay back the debt, because he was in debt for all of his record deals and getting out of a legal contract with his manager. So again, the tenacity and the so now he's effortless. I mean, he's in the flow, you know. The tours just fall into place. Everybody comes to him. He decides what he wants or not. But there's a certain depth, a certain sort of integrity to what he does that he's worked incredibly hard on in his life. So I think it's about both. There is an ease to it. There is a flow to it. But it's also challenging, and it needs to be challenging, because that's what forges you into who you really are, you know.
What do you say to people who are just impatient? Like, they're on a good trajectory, things are going well, they are in their flow, so to speak, but they're really impatient. They want the either spiritual, emotional, material rewards of success, but they want them now.
I've been like that for 20 years.
Yeah.
So you know, and it's been hell in some way, because I'm already a patient person to start with. It seems now patient I've become, and I still am learning patience every step of the way, you know. And so I think that what I would say is that, you know, get ready to be more patient, but it's worth it, you know, because those things, the important things come the hard way. Doesn't mean that you have to make it hard, but those things, life, the important stuff, I say that being yourself for a living is, on the one hand, all, whether it's Shakespeare who said, you know, I think it was he who said,
"To thine own self be true."
Be true to yourself. Mm-hmm. Buddha said, you know, there's be yourself, know yourself, mm-hmm. love yourself. Everybody's kind of said those sorts of things. So it's kind of a simple truth, but at the same time, in our world, that is the hardest thing to do, is to find out who you actually are. To make a living out of it, I mean, that adds another whole dimension to it. Yet it's also elemental, like you say. It's just kind of like there's nothing actually to say. Just be it.
What about those horrible aspects of ourselves that we
– the darkness.
Yeah, that you need to hold at bay, keep the wolves out.
Well, I would say the opposite. I would say that you have to face your darkness, because until you can actually bring it into the light, until you can face your shadow, you're not being yourself yet. So if you're really on that journey of sincere growth, somewhere along the way – some sort of, you think of Steve Jobs, he started his dream company and he brought in a CEO to run it for him. That CEO turned the board against him and he was ousted from his own company at 30.
Yeah.
He had a whole sort of existential crisis, and then he realized, hey, this is a blessing. I didn't want to be a manager anyway. He went back to creativity. It was in Pixar, which then took over Apple, and he was brought back in on his terms. And the man died at 56. I mean, that's like a whole Greek myth in 30 years. He lived 10 lifetimes in that time. It can be done, you know. So, but it's the real thing. Let's just put it that way. I say with a gasp.
Now, you talk about this Ben-trepreneuring.
Be-entrepreneuring.
Yeah, Ben gets excited when he has Ben in it. It's not about you.
You're in there, Ben.
Be-entrepreneuring. Yeah. Okay, what is that? It's another one of your inventions.
Yes, it is a bit of a tongue twister, but once you get it, you never forget it. Mm-hmm. What happened there is I started out in a very sort of intuitive way because I thought, you know, I worked at one bank for 3 years and I moved to another. And I thought, let me consolidate my experience. I was only 27. Let me do another 2 or 3 years here. And maybe at the age of 30 or so, I'll go and do my thing. And which I was getting a sense of. Mm-hmm. But life had other plans and I ended up just leaping. And I had this intuition of what it would be like. Bruce Springsteen or, I had, role models that personified it, but I still didn't have a name for it. And then one day, I was actually working through a book called Multipreneuring, where this guy was saying, well, the modern way is to have multiple entrepreneurial ventures.
Right.
So that gave me this idea of inventing a word. And I just had this being, which is the spiritual. So being yourself, being in the now. And then the entrepreneur was more the worldly. And it's sort of a yin and yang idea came to me. So it's the being side is the one side, and the other side is the worldly. And you bring them together and you've got this new word, be-entrepreneuring, which is being yourself for a living. And it just stuck.
I like it. It sounds like a good word. It sounds like a good thought.
Well, what are your feelings on people with New Year's resolutions, people with grand ideas about how this will be their year, you know, that kind of thing? Does that inspire you or do you find it's mostly rubbish?
I think it's fickle. I do think that life does happen in cycles, and we can use this kind of calendar year to leverage reflection at the end and sort of enthusiasm at the beginning. But I think a lot of that stuff is just, well, you know, 3 months, you know, in August, the editor says, what are we doing in the January issue? And everyone sort of gears all of their usual tips around this New Year resolution thing.
Yeah, correct.
And then that puts pressure on everyone to go, oh, what am I going to do, you know? And then the proverbial, you know, the gym's full. And
also, a lot of people just aren't cognizant of how well they're actually doing in
exactly,
the moment.
Exactly.
Like you just, life is not too bad.
Yeah, it's not,
you don't need to change everything. Not everything needs reinvention, and it's not all the disaster, right?
Exactly. And you don't have to drive yourself to the absolute extreme on every level just to feel okay, you know. And I think we pushed very hard. It's kind of a commercial thing, and we do it to ourselves. And so definitely just be okay.
All right, now.
easier said than done.
It's easier said than done, totally. If people want to find out more, if they want to get your books, give us all the info.
Well, be entrepreneuring. You say you like that word. Wait
right,
until
I do.
You have to spell it to someone as an email.
And then there's no extra E.
Yes.
So it's B-N-T-R-E.
It's the P-R-E. Word entrepreneuring, entrepreneuring with a B in front.
Right.
And just Google that. Or if you just Google Robin Wheeler, then it'll come up. So there's my website.
There we go.
And the books are available there or in the stores. You just ask the stores. And, you know, social media, I keep quite a presence there. So you can hook up. That's usually how I hook up with people these days.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, friend request or follow and stay in touch that way. I am kind of a little bit hard to get, Gareth, because it's, you know, when I first started out and I wrote my first article for the newspaper and put my phone number there, and it was lovely to be in the paper.
Yeah.
But 3 weeks later, at my expense, I'd phoned everybody back and I realized, okay.
A great plan.
Yeah, it was a nice start, but I have to be very careful with my energy because just to cater for what I'm doing, it's a full-time job. So to help people as an extension of that, I'm quite selective actually at this stage with what I do. And I've turned things on the corporates because, you know, that whole corporate attitude, which is, I mean, somebody once asked me to do a talk there and she said, we want you to talk on talent attraction and retention. We want the best people.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, well, there's only one of me in the world. So tell me why I should come and do this talk. And that stumped her. But if she could answer that question, I would have added the value she needed. So my approach to corporates now is these guys need this. I can't help them until they're sincere and ready and pay. I'm not doing any more proposals. I'm not doing it on their terms. They must tell me. They already got staff that are getting paid. They must tell me why I should come and I've got so many great things I'm doing. Why should I leave
writing
two books at the same time in my garden and come and work with you? You'd better give me a good reason, you know. And money's somewhere in there, but the money is you buy an Aston Martin because it's worth it. The money is something they pay because if they pay for it, they're going to be real about it. So if they don't pitch it right to me, Gareth.
Any advice for Donald Trump? It's his inauguration this week.
He needs my help.
Does he? What would your first bit of advice? Because, of course, he doesn't think he needs anyone's help.
Well, exactly. That goes back to my original corporate point. My advice to him would be, convince me why I should speak to you. And he'd already be on path by then.
Mm.
And then I would confront him with a whole lot of things that he'd have to go and do. Ask himself some serious questions. I mean, for example, the corporate thing, again, a contrast between the old and the new. You get the CEO, who's often a sociopath, says, I don't want soft skills, I want hard skills.
Yeah.
So I say to him, okay, go home on Friday night, don't watch TV, don't play any sport, don't commune with your friends, and just come back on Monday morning and tell me about hard. That's really hard. Go and face yourself. Go and sit with yourself. So,
and
that's
do,
what people
do,
need
do
to
any
do.
Of them get through it without cracking?
Let's just say that only a few of them get back to me.
I'll bet.
But eventually they all will, you know, and I think that's again, I say this in a sort of serious, joking, jest kind of way, but when you reel about something, you eventually get to the point where you just know what you're doing and you know that even if it might be difficult, you have to just keep doing that thing and you just trust, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I've got no choice but to carry on, and the world must fit in. I've got this thing that I do. Being yourself for a living thing, I just started to find that I really enjoyed photography with the advent of smartphones.
Mm.
I started to take photographs because it was in my pocket.
Right. You didn't have to hold around a whole bag of equipment.
Exactly. And then I started realizing, well, you know, I'm quite good at this, and these are really lovely pictures. And then with social media, you started getting these memes, and I've written thousands of these one-liners. Some of them are throwaway, but a lot of them are truly profound. And then I started thinking, well, if I combine these two things, and now on social media, I've got probably, I don't know, 1,100 of these things that I've designed.
Wow.
So, and one of them is, I will stand my ground until new ground is broken.
Hmm.
And there's a picture of my feet on the beach. So that's kind of my approach, is that stick to your guns. The market will turn in your favor. If you're sincere, it'll come your way. You know?
Wow. That's a very profound thing to say. Well, listen, Robin, this has been fantastic.
Thank you, Gareth. You've got
all these books out that people can buy, even if you're too busy to see everybody.
I'm playing hard to get.
No, I understand. No, I got you. And let's try and relieve people of this horrible yoke of being beast of burden in a corporation.
Just go for it. That's what people need to do.
All right. Very, very good. There's some
Thank
helpful.
You so much.
What a pleasure. What a pleasure to have you here this morning. Helpful advice and some thoughts from Robin Wheeler. CliffCentral.com.